You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Is autism an epidemic? Or is it a superpower? Are you a little bit on the spectrum? Or are you hashtag actually autistic? I'm Carrie Stewart Lingle, host of NeuroEmergent. Join me from 11 a.m. to noon on the fourth Wednesday of every month to explore neurodiversity in the Pacific Northwest and beyond, right here on KBOO Community Radio.
used to do ever since he left with his smoking shoe. Now I sleep with sorrow curled round my back and a heart by my side ready to attack. Yeah. A cotton mouth prayer and a broken string.
Talking. Thank you for tuning in to Let's Talk, Portland Community College's broadcast about disability awareness. Let's Talk is a space for students from Portland Community College experiencing disabilities to discuss perspectives, ideas, and worldviews in an inclusive and accessible environment. We broadcast bi-weekly on our home website, pcc.edu/DCA, and bi-monthly right here on KPOO 90.7 FM. Today's the first Friday of the month, so we're coming to you live from KPOO studio. As a reminder, the views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions or positions of Portland Community College, PCC Foundation, or KPOO FM. My name is Asher, and with me today are Miri and Miguel, along with our special guest, Jesse, co-department chair and faculty member at Portland Community College. Hi, everyone.
Thanks, Asher.
Hello. So instead of doing the scoop this month, this whole episode is going to be dedicated to what's going on at PCC and in the education sphere at large this upcoming school year. So, Jesse, I wanted to thank you for joining us today. Would you introduce yourself to the listeners and tell us about your background and what you do at PCC?
Sure. Thanks, Mary. Thanks, Asher. My name is Jesse Mejia. I'm co-department chair of PCC's Music and Sonic Arts Department, along with Sarah Gaskins, my other co-chair. So about 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago now, I started teaching at PCC. I was basically brought in from industry in order to help design and implement the Creative Coding and Immersive Technology program that sits now within the Music and Sonic Arts Department. Mm-hmm. So the Music and Sonic Arts Department has been around for about 30 years. The Creative Coding side of things is quite a bit newer.
Mm-hmm.
I've been teaching in that department, primarily the Creative Coding courses, but also music classes as well, for 6 or 7 years now.
Nice.
Cool.
So we have talked about what's going on with the school and Music and Sonic Arts here on KBOO before. And what is currently in the cards for that program?
Right, so as people may or may not have heard, Music and Sonic Arts is currently on the administration's chopping block. They're trying to close the program down.
Mm-hmm.
They are sort of positioning that as a fiscal decision, mm-hmm. although they've told us that they're not taking enrollment into consideration with that, which is frustrating because our department is extremely well enrolled. It's mm-hmm. it's a growing program. It's really popular.
Yeah.
And it's really successfully connecting people with jobs for a really long time. Basically, they went on a search to look for a program to cut. They looked at a bunch of different programs at PCC, and they decided that they would save money by cutting any program that had reason to cut.
Uh-huh.
And the reason that they've given us is that they are unable to see the jobs that our degree directly connects to.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, in my opinion, a huge administrative oversight and a lack of clarity on kind of what the training we're providing is, what the job market is.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's the current state of things. They're trying to close the program. And at the moment, current students have until October 31st to meet with an advisor and determine what their academic plan is, because the college has a mandate to create a teach-out program so that current students can finish the degrees that they're working on.
Yeah. Mm. I've been hearing about that. So how does the teach-through program work? Because I talked to the advisor for the program, and she said that new students aren't being accepted after this term, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
And existing students and new students all also need to kind of work with their academic advisor to make an academic plan in order to be kind of counted. And by counted, I guess what I've been told by administration is that they need to figure out how many students there are who are planning on completing this degree, and then determine how long it'll take for them to complete, and then that's the length of time that our courses will continue being offered.
Mm-hmm.
So as of now, there aren't any classes being cut, and there isn't any discussion of when that would happen, because I think because of state mandated rules, they need to mm-hmm. kind of do this assessment process before determining the details on that teach out.
Okay, so they have to mm-hmm. give everyone a chance to take the classes that they need to get the credits they need to graduate first.
They do, and it feels like a sort of a complicated situation where they need to kind of get confirmation from every student, which also can feel to students and faculty like it's weeding out students, or like the number could look lower than it is if students haven't kind of done what they're told to do, met with an advisor, formed an academic plan.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really hopeful, and by we I mean faculty. I'm not sure what administration hopes, but
yeah.
faculty
yeah.
is really hopeful that all of our students will kind of jump through these hoops that administration is making them jump through so that they are properly counted and so that the teach out is as long as it needs to be for these students to complete.
Yeah.
Of course, I would prefer to keep the program open and accept new students, but mm-hmm. right now my focus is on at least letting our current students finish out their degrees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good program. It's the one that I went to. You were my teacher for a couple of years. I understand most things that I understand now about computer programming from you and other teachers in that program, and it got me interested in developing microcontroller programs and circuit board planning and all that kind of thing. So hearing that there's creative coding in a music program, a lot of people would not think that it would involve circuit boards or programming microcontrollers or anything like that. So what kind of technology is the creative coding emphasizing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And yeah, totally. I just a little background on me. I went to some sort of more traditional music schools, or rather got traditional music degrees. And I found that didn't necessarily lead me into jobs. I wasn't able to find opportunities to kind of, well, pay my rent based on anything that was related to what I had studied in college. As, you know, a lot of us who went to liberal arts school learn. You get this expensive degree and it doesn't necessarily lead to jobs. So I spent a bunch of time getting into various technical things on my own. And then also I went to code school at one point and eventually sort of cobbled together a bunch of skills that ended up being extremely relevant for working on large scale sound and light and video installation work. In two spaces primarily. I was working in art spaces, which was nice, and I mean, in terms of financially supportive, I would call it nice. It was I was really passionate about that work, and I loved doing it, but it wasn't paying many of my bills. It was paying some of my bills.
So, art spaces is in like galleries.
Galleries. I did a lot of work with. I've done a lot of work with choreographers and dancers, and
that's cool.
Also installation work. And some of that has been. All of it has been really great. Some of it has been helpful financially, but the stuff that really kind of made me feel like I had figured out what my career path was when I started working in the commercial sectors, started working for brands and with creative agencies, working on large-scale installations for like product launches and brand events. And there's a lot of work that is being done by artists who have a little bit of technical knowledge, enough to kind of put all these pieces together and make exciting things happen. And I was having a lot of success doing that work, and at the same time was approached by PCC to kind of bring that type of industry training into the community college space. So the creative coding program is largely designed by me and other colleagues in the professional creative space in Portland, sitting down and deciding what are the skills that we are seeing most commonly on these big, well-paying jobs, and what are the not just what are the skills that we're seeing, but what are the skills that are being done by artists. So it's specifically stuff that is great if you already have some skills and creativity around music or video or light art. Being able to connect that with like sensors, sensing bodies to control the lights or the video, or synchronizing sound to light, or synchronizing sound to video. All of these kind of more technical areas really kind of blossom into huge opportunities, both creatively and commercially, when artists have these technical skills. So yes, Arduinos, microcontrollers, getting sensors to control light and sound, that was kind of one of the clear technologies that we wanted to include. Spatialized sound, that's another really important one, getting sound to move around spaces, be immersive in ways. So anything from something like a theater setting to something like a hallway or an elevator where sound is kind of moving up and down a space or swirling around, all of that stuff requires a little bit of computer programming. Not a ton, a lot of creativity and a little bit of computer programming. So it's sort of the sweet spot in terms of technical training for artists.
Yeah, because you guys have a 32-speaker system set up?
We do, yeah. We have a 32-channel speaker array at PCC.
Cool.
And that allows us to do things like, you know, there is there's certainly a career track as well that some of our students take into film sound and film production. And mm-hmm. so that's obviously an area where we're used to seeing and hearing multi-channel sound.
Mm-hmm.
The commercial space, I would say, is more newer and emergent. And then these kind of gallery, theater, art spaces are also generally multi-channel environments. So multi-channel sound specifically is not something that's being taught like at the bachelor's level in music departments. I mean, generally, a music degree, as it's stood in I would say, in this country, but really in the world, most music degrees have been focused on this kind of Eurocentric classical tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff's really great if you're trying to go into a career playing that stuff, or if you're particularly passionate about it, or if you want to go into a career in academia teaching that stuff. But in terms of the world of kind of working musicians and sound designers and audio engineers, most of the stuff that you learn in those traditional bachelor's degrees is not necessarily career relevant, or at least not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've been doing in the Music Sonic Arts Department is really kind of cherry picking the most relevant stuff that's also not being taught in these more traditional programs, and yeah, putting that in the hands of our community college classes.
Nice. Yeah, so you said you have a background, or what really expanded your ability to do this kind of thing was working with brands.
Mm-hmm.
And your most recent capstone project was in that same vein, right? It was a launch for a fake brand made up by the students.
Yeah, so that's something that's it's been present in a few of our capstones over the years, because because this is sort of my area of professional expertise, I tend to set up the capstone as sort of a way to start thinking about doing large scale client work.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a team of students, the best way to approximate what client work for a creative agency looks like is by sort of inventing a brand, ideally having a brand. And in fact, we did have a brand sponsor this year, a real brand sponsor, which was Simaspace.
Awesome. Oh, right, right, right.
So yeah, Simaspace, if you don't know, is a nonprofit that is focused on accessible technology and experiences primarily for the deaf and hard of hearing community, but also blind and especially deafblind community.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
So yeah, we had a connection in class, because one of our students was really involved with Simaspace as one of the kind of primary I want to say collaborator, but really like inventor is the best term that comes to mind for Dylan Simeon, who's just like an extremely talented engineer who's building interfaces for deaf and hard of hearing folks,
mm-hmm.
to not just experience sound and music, but for creating sound and music. So because Dylan was in the capstone class, Dylan was able to form a bridge to Simaspace in a very concrete way, where they became a sponsor for our capstone, and a lot of that work is going into their cafe. So this doesn't quite parallel the type of brand relationship that I'm talking about, where a brand is like asking for something specific.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But it was a really cool collaboration.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Dylan did. We did do an interview with Dylan too, and heard that. Yeah, we saw their really cool haptic system. That's like a vest kind of thing, where there's a lot of vibrations over the chest,
yes.
that respond to music or beats or what have you. I am very curious on like how that all works and how that. Wires go into, I don't know. I have no expertise in this, so yeah.
Totally, yeah, and it's really aligned with what we're teaching. And in fact, I mean, frankly, Dylan knows all of the skills that we're teaching and entered the program with those skills.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a really great synergy, because what we're doing in the creative coding program is figuring out how to connect sound to light, and light to mm-hmm. sound, and sound to video, and sound to haptics. All of this stuff is really kind of the core technology that we're learning anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in talking to Dylan, I believe that the reason Dylan entered the program was really for the credential, to have that credential to kind of reinforce the work that they're already doing in in the world. You know, just having a credential that reflects your expertise, even if you already have the expertise, can be helpful.
Yeah,
which is something that the current PCC administration is not seeing, is not aware of, and that's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
That the degree is extremely meaningful and valuable to a lot of folks, but
yeah, even having an associate's degree is so much more than being like, well, I learned how to do this thing on YouTube.
Learn something.
When your resume just says, trust me, bro.
Doors to so many people, especially like for the deafblind community who cannot hear screen readers, and having that avenue open for them, I think that's beautiful and a powerful way to have that experience, music and sound and stuff like that for them.
Yeah, it's really exciting stuff. Yeah, and you know, one of the things that administration has been telling us is that they recognize that the skills we're teaching are useful, but they're not sure that the credential is needed. And I think that's the big disconnect in terms of sort of administration understanding the value and necessity of our program, is that these credentials are the only credentials that exist for this type of stuff. So if you want to go into work connecting sound and light together, whether it's for accessibility projects or commercial projects or sort of anything, there aren't many credentials in the world that you can point to for that technology. So just having something to point to, and like you said, Mary, even having any associate's degree is clearly useful. Otherwise, why are we giving them out?
Because it has the 2-year and the 1-year certificate, right?
Yes, yeah. We have the Music and Sonic Arts program has 4 awards in total. There's 2 Associates Awards, Music and Sonic Arts Associates and the Creative Coding and Immersive Technology Associates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then both of those have 1 year. An Associates is considered a 2-year degree because that's the time it takes if you're full-time, which is a big if. A lot of our students are not full-time.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that I worry about with this teach-out is that students that are not able to attend full-time are not going to fit within this 2-year. They haven't said 2 years. They're assessing things.
Mm-hmm.
The assumption is that it will be a 2-year teach-out program.
And that
potentially leaves students that might take 4 or more years to complete based on their life situation.
Especially not in this day and age now.
Yeah, especially how expensive college and university and life is in general.
And I know some of the people in the program are already having to take a step away from school.
Yeah.
For a year or so, just in case, or not in case, just because of other stuff going on.
Yeah.
So if it is the case that there is only a 2-year teach out and they lose a year, then they're going to have to either really cram everything into that one final year or not be able to
finish
the degree.
All. Yeah.
And it'll be kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy of, oh, well, this person was in this course, but they didn't get a degree, so they didn't get the job. And I'm like, well that's because they didn't get the chance to.
And I know it. I'm not sure what the situation is right now in terms of, like, financial aid in the nation, but I know of at least one student who is needing to postpone these studies due to financial aid not working out this year for whatever new reasons financial aid is probably not working out. And so, that's rough timing. Like, we're gutting the education system and funding for education at the same time that there's this maybe very time-sensitive teach-out happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what kind of, what is the professional scene like here of, like, things that people are doing after this?
So there's a lot of stuff happening in Portland specifically around music and music technology. Music technology is really the framing that we've one of the things that we've learned during this process of administration, like clearly not understanding why our program exists, what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that is just a communications problem on our part and a branding problem on our part.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I've been trying to do is continually frame our program under the category of music technology as opposed to just music.
Yeah.
Because when we say music, it gets conflated with more academic, like I said, sort of Euroclassical-centric programs that are
learning about counterpoints and
some of that
violin.
Totally. Some of that stuff is really important in the kind of modern professional music landscape, but not all of it. Not a full 4-year bachelor's, again, unless you're going into Euroclassical performance of some sort or teaching that. Mm-hmm. But in Portland, the professional music scene and music technology scene is really huge. Mm. A recent study by PSU showed that there are around 23,000 jobs in the music and music tech sectors.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, right?
It's a lot. Yeah. And so it's hard to come to that numbers. So there's like a... They went through a really kind of deep study figuring out how to capture all of the different jobs that this would entail. So we are talking about performing musicians here, but most of the jobs are things that are more like running sound in venues or audio editing for podcasts, certainly sound design for commercial work, both live events and also
working at a radio station.
Working at a radio station.
I know a lot of Music Celtic Arts people have volunteered here at some point or another. We've had a soundboard operator who was Music Sonic Arts grad in past, I believe.
Yes, so. We did.
Yeah, the avenues for that training are not a traditional 4-year music degree. That's not where, I mean, not to say that music majors don't go into radio, but but I will say as someone, again,
broadly.
Who got these degrees, as someone who got these degrees, I didn't learn the skills to operate a soundboard during my traditional music degree. I learned that after the fact. And that's certainly not always the case. There are plenty of music programs that incorporate a little bit of tech. But we're kind of the other way around. We incorporate a lot of music tech and a little bit of music theory and kind of more traditional music music approaches.
There's not a Suzuki method for Pro Tools.
Right, totally. Or if there is, you need to go to a really expensive kind of for-profit. Like Full Sail comes to mind, which they've come under a lot of critique lately for being so expensive. So being able to get those skills at an accessible institution where you can use financial aid has been really great. So again, the Music and Sonic Arts Department has been around for about 30 years, and much of that core programming has, I would say, like, not remained the same, but remained maybe the same in intent, where the intent is teaching kind of like the most currently relevant audio and music technology skills. So because it's been around for so long, like you alluded to, there are former grads of the program all over the music tech space. So in these kind of 23,000 jobs in the music tech sector, we have no idea what percentage of those are music and sonic arts grads. But I do know that just anecdotally going to venues and talking to former students that our grads are everywhere. We've really kind of been a very interwoven part of the kind of music and music tech fabric of Portland.
And even if it's just 1% of those jobs, then that's still many, many years worth of students or worth of graduates. So that would be an impressive number.
So, right, the position the administration has taken is that they don't think the jobs exist. And the reason they don't think the jobs exist is because they're like typing music into Indeed or creative coding into, you know, some just sort of more traditional way to search for jobs, which is not generally how this sector works.
Checking everything on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn,
right.
LinkedIn isn't not the best anymore.
This is the industry where you get a job by meeting someone on accident outside of a bar.
That doesn't happen anymore.
It's really true. I mean, our faculty is all kind of in industry and well connected. So one way that our grads do often get jobs is through these faculty connections or through connections that they make with their peers in the program.
It's how I got this job.
It's how,
I met Greg through my time in the program because I took video editing and he was teaching that. And then I met the Phyllis and our like producers through him, and now I'm working here and working my way up a ladder and all that from just needing a multimedia credit for this program. So
I maybe that job was posted, your job, maybe not, I don't know.
It was in.
It was.
I don't know how you got
it. Kind of created
in.
On accident. Like, I technically applied for an internship a little bit too late because I didn't even see the posting until after the date. But they looked at my resume and my CV and my cover letter, and they were like, maybe we should create a job for you, because you have a background in audio, you focus specifically on accessibility programming in software and for audio, and have a background in education, so we'll just bring you on here, and you know, you can help manage our interns because you have more experience than them, and so
that's great.
I actually came in as an intern. That was
and for some reason you stuck around.
It was a crazy time.
Still putting up with me.
You're great. You're fine.
I mean, the reality is that there's lots of jobs, or like you kind of illustrated, opportunity for jobs to be created with if, you know, the right person comes along. But they're not jobs that our institution knows how to find.
Yeah.
Which isn't surprising. The whole reason our program exists is to help students learn how to find those jobs.
Yeah.
So I'm not
surprised. And a lot of them even create their own, like either starting their own business, going into business together, leaving the country or the city. For like one of the instructors moved away because they got a job, was it in Vegas, doing like just big performance setup programming work, and or you know, have had to take a year off, a term off, because they're on a national or international tour.
Yeah,
kind of thing. Awesome. So
yeah,
we've been really lucky in the music and sonic arts department to have a lot of really kind of serious, successful working musicians and music tech folks. It's kind of a star-studded faculty, and that's wild, especially at a community college level, and it's also wild to decide that that shouldn't exist anymore, especially when it's super successful, and like by every measure except for the administration's measure of we can't find the jobs on our very specific search engine.
Because it has a super high graduation rate. Right?
It has
like much higher than PCC's normal.
Yes, it has a high graduation rate. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but extremely high enrollment. The only number that we don't have is like what is the percentage of students who then have gainful employment afterwards. And our sense is that that is also very high, but we don't have a way of tracking that. The college doesn't have a way to track that.
And at this point in time, gainful employment is hard. If you like, my wife has, and two associates, a bachelor's and a master's degree, and we make the same amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's gainful employment at this time is just difficult to find in general, especially in
especially
with lots of potential employers, brands using generative AI stuff instead of hiring. Mm-hmm. You know, either a composer, poster designer, or a video editor, and all these products that are marketed toward podcasters or brands, brand developers of make your workforce and workload tiny by just clicking this button and coming up with ideas.
They were right when they said AI is taking over our jobs. Please no, don't do it. No.
I mean, as long as it only takes over for a short amount of time, then there will still be people that remember how to do those jobs.
Yeah.
Right. I really hope so.
But AI can't fix everything, you know? Like, it's not a... They want to fix it if it was a Band-Aid, but it's just, it's not going to work...
Long-term.
Long-term, no. Yeah.
No.
It's like why jukeboxes are so expensive, because there's like 7 people in the world who still know how to fix them.
They must be earning a lot just fixing one jukebox.
Yeah. I would like to see AI try to fix a pinball machine.
Oh.
I would like to see an AI learn how to get really angry at a pinball machine and start throwing things.
Oh, gosh.
So how does one go about making their career in this industry? Because it's weird to get into. Not necessarily hard, but weird. Because you don't... It is different than normal jobs. You don't just go on Indeed and click apply for this job. And a lot of times if you do, it's either not a real company or you're actually going to be working as a receptionist or at a call center or something.
Totally.
So how do you find those connections and then build your portfolio?
Yeah,
I feel like it's really... I mean, and this is like an answer that probably institutions hate, but I feel like it's extremely individual. It's going to be totally different for every person. I know that my path was pretty unusual. For me, it was, yeah, I'm going to go to music school, and then I'm going to go to more music school, and and then
that sounds familiar.
Round and around we go.
And then I was like, okay, well, that didn't work. It did qualify me to be a teacher, although at that point in time, fresh off of my master's degree, I wasn't interested in becoming a teacher because I didn't have any real world experience, or I wasn't comfortable with the idea of teaching something that I had never successfully done. Something that I had learned about, and I had a lot of, like, I was deep in theory that I was excited about. Mm-hmm. And the idea of teaching that theory was sort of interesting and tempting, but not having, not knowing how else I could, like, pay rent. It wouldn't have felt right to me.
Yeah.
So I ended up working, like, at Guitar Center, and then, like, a long string of IT and AV jobs. Which I didn't realize, but along the way I was learning a bunch of skills that came in totally handy for the stuff that sort of became my career later.
Mm-hmm.
Like understanding what signals need what kind of wires and plugs, stuff that I was learning while just kind of doing
voltage
home theater installation.
Yeah.
Yep, all of that stuff was really useful. And so all of that stuff did ultimately work its way into curriculum that I teach, but it's like in a more cherry-picked way. So I feel like I went through this really unusual path, I think. But some of it, I think, I have heard echoes of and seen echoes in grads, like wanting, if you want to do big creative installation work, it's good to learn how to run sound for something first. And so the kind of like basic sound engineering and audio engineering stuff and, yeah, running cables, at least for my trajectory, was important, not just knowing how to do the kind of big creative stuff or highly technical stuff, but like the kind of in the grounds and or on the ground stuff. And all of that also lets you kind of realize what's possible and what things cost as well. So your ideas can be more practical. You can pitch something and actually know what it might take to run wires. So it is, it's a bunch of training. It's a bunch of creativity, and like we were saying before, it's also a lot of networking and meeting people. And I think maintaining that network and meeting people, and then a part of that is also kind of like self-branding, like what, figuring out what it is that you do that's special, which I don't know, I heard you do a minute ago, Mary. like realizing like, oh, I'm this and this and this, and that is unusual, and maybe people need that.
Yeah.
And so kind of identifying what your kind of special lane is and figuring out how to put that in front of the right people, I feel like is is what makes sense to me. Not searching on Indeed, probably. Maybe it's maybe that also. Yeah.
Maybe both, yeah. You know?
Yeah. And you said maintaining your network. How does that work? And what do you mean by that?
What did I mean by that? I think, I guess for me it meant like going to a lot of events and being kind of a constant, like reminding people that you exist, like talking about the things that you've been doing, and then being the person that they think of when something comes up that's the thing that you do. So a lot of like, I think like the word networking can be rough, and maybe it's easy to imagine like a cheesy networking event where everyone's like wearing a name tag and sort of trying to get a job.
Hi,
or something.
My name is.
But this more kind of organic networking of like, if you're interested in playing shows, go to all of the shows and be the person, like just be social, meet people. And little by little, people will start remembering what it is like, oh yeah, that's the person that like knows how to work with light sensors or knows how to make video change when someone's walking around, or you know, whatever it is that you're trying to do. Yeah. Like the more people that know that you can do it, the more likely you'll be the person that they hit
that
up.
Guy with the really cool guitar, right?
Maybe I'll have them in my music video.
Right. I mean, I guess, yeah,
or, like, oh, that's the director and the photographer. Maybe, you know, with our new album coming up and we have a single that our studio or that our label wants to make a video for, you know, hey, I've seen you at shows, that kind of thing.
Yeah, totally. And like, it's sort of starting a business. And, you know, one of the first things that people ask when you're sort of pitching a new business is, what makes you different? What's the thing that, like, oh, there's a million of this. What's different about your version of it? Mm-hmm. So kind of, like, maybe you're a person with a guitar. What's different about your person with a guitar-ness versus someone else's?
Everybody else. Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
And that seems true for a lot of industries too, and not just music and gigging or installation work, but like programmers or sound designers or even like managers and stuff. Mm. Probably
everything in an entertainment industry is mm-hmm. related to like networking and everything. You go out there and just set yourself out there. I need to print out business cards. You should do that.
Yeah.
Just pass them out every time I go out.
Or just I've been having just a QR code on my phone, and I don't know. I think that's good, but also like the business card still feels like something that people might look at and be like, oh yeah, that person,
as opposed
to like the QR code that's a tab that's long gone or something.
It's tab number 17 and there something in their 38 tabs
or 900 tabs on their phone. And you're like, oh,
yeah, exactly.
What?
That automatically what tab was this for?
Firefox on my phone has a little infinity symbol next to the tabs.
Oh, man.
It happens after maybe 10 or 15. I'm not sure.
I force myself to only have six. I only have, like, if I'm doing something that takes a bunch of tabs, like, trying to do DMV, whatever, that'll be a bunch. Or a job applying, mm-hmm. where every single time you click, it opens up a new tab. But I limit myself to six.
I don't know
the
how
amount
to do
of
it.
Apps I've that I have open, though.
Yeah, no. Six, I feel like, is a bit much. I limit myself to at least four. Just
I do the same thing to Escher, because I'm just like, no, if I have more than six, like, why do I have all these open?
Yeah. Why was this one open? Yeah. Was this one open for how long? And it's playing like music in the background? What's it?
And the business card is much less likely to get purged than that.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, what to put on your business card is a trick. Mm-hmm. It's like hard. Yeah. I feel like sort of before I figured out what I was really wanting to do with, or there's a difference between knowing what you want to do for work and knowing how to do what you want to do for work,
yes.
I think.
Yeah.
And,
it's very important.
Yeah. And for a while I was like, okay, my niche is that I was doing IT work for a while. I was basically like desktop and laptop support, helping people get their email to work or whatever, or like set up networks in small offices. And I felt like my niche there was that I felt like I was a pretty good communicator and like good at talking to people, mm-hmm. and I felt like that was unusual in the like desktop and laptop support sector.
That is very true.
So I
worked
in
customer service.
IT services, and by experience, I'm like, wait, why am I the most talkative person here? So
totally. So instead of like my cover letters and resumes leading with like a list of acronyms and tech skills that I had, I was trying to lead with communication stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm easy to talk to, easy to get along with, I'm nice. Yeah. I also
I'm
know
nice.
How to do all the stuff you need, but like mm-hmm. everyone knows how to do all the stuff you need that you're interviewing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, if you could present yourself as nice,
sociable.
Sociable, understanding, and funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People really like working with people who are funny.
They are, yeah.
I have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is also all stuff that like we as faculty all think about a lot, like in terms of giving students advice and sitting down in offices, like how do we get jobs and how do we help students figure out how to get jobs? Because it is weird. I don't think it's just the kind of music tech market that's like less traditional search engine focused.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like that's a larger trend through a lot of industries. And that kind of job coaching or even just like interview skill, resume skill coaching, that was something that I really, really wanted in my undergrad and didn't get at all. Mm-hmm. I went to a fancy liberal arts school that I think the assumption was if you're here, you don't need this.
Oh, man.
Whether it's because, I had was there with a ton of loans and financial aid, but like maybe the assumption is that you have all the connections you need,
mm-hmm.
or you don't even
Daddy
really
knows
need
someone.
To work,
yeah.
or why would you be, getting why would you be a music major? Was the assumption there?
Yeah, no.
So I mean, and that's one of the reasons I've been so happy at PCC is because it feels so much more kind of connected to the real world and skills, mm-hmm. and like helping people actually get work. But it's also why this whole administration theme thing
feels almost like a strange farce. Like, the very reason that I'm teaching at PCC is because most colleges, I don't think, connect you very directly to an industry and jobs. No. And it's a hard thing to do, and we certainly don't do it perfectly, but we do it way more than anywhere that I've been.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've always liked about PCC, too, is we have, you know, all of our career pathways, our career advisors, even from the very starting level. Like, I started when I was 16, and in my first couple of weeks, my advisor was like, all right, so what's the kind of thing you want to do? Let's get you on a course to get that way. And I'm awesome, sweet, that sounds great, versus a lot of colleges where you kind of already sign up for what the platter is already made, and they will just bring it to you.
Totally. Or you go into a place and you're like, oh, what am I doing here? How do I get around? Because especially when you're first generation, you're like, I don't know what all the resources are, or who am I supposed to talk to?
Who am I going to go to?
Like, or what are the resources? And you're just kind of like, I remember my first two weeks of college when I moved out here in 2017, I was like, I don't even know what I'm doing here. Like, what is this?
And it's so much less expensive than other schools. Like,
I mean, going it's probably to a what, four-year like university,
10% of the price of a term at the city college or the state college.
And
city university, I mean.
Yep. And it's more focused on all of this stuff that kind of falls more in the realms of like social work or job placement help or something. All of that exists. I mean, maybe that exists at fancier four-year institutions. I also was a first generation college student, and so I also didn't really know what I should ask for or could ask for. So when I wasn't when I didn't see job coaching, I just assumed it wasn't there, but maybe it was. I don't know.
But PCC really front loads that on, you know, all of our advertising, all of the pamphlets we send out. It just is routinely have full school email blasts about career fairs, all that stuff, which a lot of other colleges or even like industry schools won't.
Yeah.
And we even have that Leica showcase every year.
Oh yeah.
I love that.
Which
was really cool.
It's crazy. It's like, oh, you know, Leica, the studio that makes all these incredibly gorgeous stop motion animation movies. They come and they look at students' work.
Yeah.
Every year.
Opportunity to get hired.
You just never know. I never thought I was going to do journalism for like a long time until one professor, she pulled me aside and she's like, Miguel, you know Spanish, right? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, do you want to write for the Spanish newspaper? I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing, but sure.
Just say yes.
I'll give it a chance. Sure. And then I was jumped in there. And I was, you know, it's all about who you can make those connections with.
Connections and the learning experience.
I think being open to learn, I think that's what helps a lot of skills, you know, being able to open to learn the new skills.
And I think also like confidence, which is the hardest one maybe.
Absolutely.
And especially like in these kind of technical fields where imposter syndrome is so real. So I feel like one of the things that's most important to me is fostering a community where everyone feels like these skills are sort of for them.
Absolutely.
Or especially not for them.
Especially in your class. When I came in and did the interviews with some of the capstone students, a lot of them were talking to me before or after the interview about how they are an incredibly anxious person and never felt supported until they were in these classes in this program, where they are given the chance to build their own confidence genuinely with support and being able to physically make things and bring something from an idea in their head to a piece of tangible equipment in front of them to a light show in front of actual people, which, you know, you don't get in the math class.
and along the way, it's constant things not working, things breaking. And so it's really critical to learn that that's the process for everyone, no matter how long they've been doing it. You know, like I've been doing this stuff a really long time, and I'm still constantly troubleshooting and running against problems. And I feel like kind of showing that this is actually hard for everyone is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us today. This has been super fun, and I hope everyone liked listening to it.
Loved it. Yeah, loved learning. So yeah. And looking forward to the school term.
Yeah. Me too.
Yep.
I'm looking forward to. Yeah, I like the new school year. It's always a fun time. It's like when you see all the people out of campus.
And you're like, oh, there's people on campus now.
They bring out the big soccer wall, and I kick the soccer ball over the wall.
I used to always really love like buying pencils.
Yeah. Oh, pencils.
I have an excuse to buy a new notebook and pen again.
Yes.
Maybe a Trapper Keeper.
Yeah,
the A2. Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, thanks so much for joining us and talking to us. And thank you so much for listening to Let's Talk. Let's Talk is Portland Community College's broadcast about disability culture. Find more information and resources concerning this episode and others at pcc.edu/DCA. You can also find linked resources on today's episode page, hosted on kboo.fm. Search for Let's Talk. This episode was produced by the Let's Talk Podcast Collective as a collaborative effort between students, the Accessible Education and Disability Resources Department, the PCC Multimedia Department, and KBOO. We post newly recorded content bi-weekly on our home website. Again, that's pcc.edu/DCA. And we hope you always tune in to our shows here on KBOO, every first and third Friday of the month at 11 a.m.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from Grand Lodge Concerts, presenting the Rowdy Summer Nights Tour with Leftover Salmon, Infamous String Dusters, and Kitchen Dwellers this August. Tickets and full summer concert list at grandlodgeconcerts.com.
You're listening.